terms of coalitions and also the call from the people of South Africa that they are demanding urgency in terms of dealing with issues that confront us. They would want to see councillors who are honest, who are ready to serve.
Recording in progress.
Serve with integrity. And they have actually given us a homework, all of us, those who are involved in local government, to say there must be a sense of urgency in whatever that we do. But I pity you, because you have got these new members with this demand. Yes, you have acted in the past as good role models for municipalities, and I dare say as well for the department of cooperative governments. And so we are meeting you with that sense of saying we are meeting people who can be good examples. But it is up to the committee and the engagement that will determine. Honorable members, there are apologies that have been given to me, that of Deputy Minister Albert Babela and Deputy Minister Kandikatimeng, and DG and senior management of the department, indicating their commitments. So specifically, the people we are with is SALCA. So there are those, and I've also received a few apologies from members. One such apology is from the whip of the committee, who might join us late, and Honorable Spice, who also had to undergo some surgery. There might be other apologies I might have missed. Secretary of the committee, any apologies?
Chairperson, there's also an apology from the minister that he's attending the trade fair, the Inter-Africa Trade Fair in KZN, and then there's an apology from Honorable Preza that also will be late because of traveling. Thank you.
Thank you. So let me welcome all, and if there's any further apology from members and from SALCA, if there's any, we can still take it before we move to the program.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thanks to the first acting president of SALCA. I would just want to add an apology of our CEO. He has been unable to lead the delegation, but in his place, Mr. Hans Juel is leading the administrative side of the delegation. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. Okay, with that, then let's move to honorable members. There's only one item in the program that talks to it would be a presentation by SALCA to the
chief. Yes, I am released from the comment at 12. I had to rush to the airport. I mean at 11 a.m. Chair.
Yes. I can assume that now there's only one item for this session. It will be presentation by SALCA. the adoption of the agenda. Honorable Mpumza, are you proposing adoption of the agenda?
Yes, I so propose, Chair.
Proposed. Any seconder? Who wants to speak and say he supports that it would be presentation by Salka, after that then it would be discussion?
I second, Chair.
Thank you very much. Salka, you have already been welcomed, and I now immediately hand over to you to make your presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me first observe all protocol and greet all the honorable members of the committee and the chairperson, as well as our own delegation, which is led by myself and the Deputy President, Angelise, and by Mr. Lance Jewell on behalf of the administration. Chairperson, we want to appreciate the opportunity to make this presentation to the Portfolio Committee. As you have just indicated in your opening remarks, we are all coming from a very tough and hard election, and we are still all busy with establishing municipalities. So that we won't be delaying you very much in the committee. Today we want to present to the Honourable Committee our annual report to the committee, but we would also like to just add a high-level presentation on the elections, as well as the coalition framework, which will be done by Mr. Lance Jewell. Without wasting any time, Honorable Chairperson, I would really want to ask Mr. Lance Jewell to lead us in the presentation from SALGA. Thank you very much.
So when we reflect on an annual basis, outcomes, meaning the outcome that deals with municipalities with sustainable and inclusive economic growth and spatial transformation, the outcome dealing with good governance and resilient municipal institutions, and lastly, the outcome that deals with financial sustainability are three externally focused outcomes, and then we have a single internally focused outcome, which is outcome four, and its focus is on an effective and an efficient administration. Essentially, it's an outcome that creates an enabler for the organization to indeed execute outcomes one, two, and three respectively. Quite often, when we reflect on our progress, Honorable Shepherdson, we must take recognition to the fact that we do all of this work in partnership with a number of stakeholders and strategic partners, and they range as per the slide across a number of stakeholders. So quite often we do things in collaboration, and quite often we do things in partnership in order to execute our mandate as an organization. When we reflect on the audit outcomes for the 2020-2021 financial year, especially the audit outcomes that is a non-financial performance, audit outcomes of the organization, so from a performance point of view, what the slide projects to you is over the last 9 years how SALCA has performed, and you can see in the first 5 years of the 2012-2017 strategy, we reached ultimately to 100%, and then in the current term of office, 2017 to 2022, we were over above 90%, but for the year under review, 2020-2021, we reached 85%, and we will reflect on why 85% for that particular year. That has been very difficult in its own. Alright, so that's the 85% performance audited by the Auditor General. From a financial audit point of view, members of the committee are quite familiar with the fact that SALCA has, at least over the last 20 years, have unqualified audit, with the last 9 being clean audit outcomes, not outcomes, and I know we are hoping at the end of this particular financial year. Not an easy task in itself. It requires a lot of discipline and ensuring that at least as an association, we lead from the front and we lead by example in managing our finances as an organization.
Yes, the next slide, Honorable Chairperson and members, reflect on the performance itself, the non-financial performance. And as I've said, we have the four outcomes that you see on the left side of the screen. And over the 4 years, the first 4 years of the five-year plan, that is the picture. And for the year under review, breaking down the individual targets for outcomes, so we achieved 31 out of the 36 outcomes. One target for outcome one. We achieved 44 out of 55 of outcome two, a target 7 out of 9 for outcome three, and then for outcome four, 35 out of the 35. Of the current financial year, being the 2021-2022 financial year, as we speak, we are executing that particular plan, so we will reflect on that at the end of the financial year, and this will be the last year of the 5 year plan itself. So as I said, this is a picture that is emerging for the year. We had 137 targets. We achieved 117, translating into 85%. And there are 20 targets that we could not achieve, translating into 15%. When you unpack the targets across the four outcomes, this is the picture that is emerging. So under outcome one, we achieved 86%, outcome 2 we achieved 50%, outcome 3 we achieved 78%, and under outcome 4 we achieved 95%, making holistically the 85% achievement again by trying to the online system, but that affected negatively the ability of us to properly convene our meetings as we ordinarily would. And then an important point we should make, Shepherdson, and we're trying to really mitigate against this difficulty, that we also find ourselves duplicating with COFTA some deliverables, and that affects, I think, both us and COFTA from executing those deliverables, because we are in the same space, attempting to do the same thing with the same audience, being the constituents that we are serving, and that does affect us negatively. So we are certainly on the stronger side. Ensure that as part of our own planning, we bring COFTA on board at early junctures, so that when we set targets for the year, we are indeed doing that in the presence of COFTA, and then could that indicate if that's an area that they themselves have looked at implementing, and at best what we should then be doing is looking at the collaboration, the partnership, instead of to we started work on financial year. through this transition, dealing and supporting them with the pre-election matters, the during-election matters, and the post-election matters. And in doing so, we had in May convened our municipalities for a special members' assembly, where a framework was adopted that guided us around how to approach the transition and defining what needs to be done. We also approved the guidelines for the transition, so a guideline that covers a number of areas that municipalities had to deal with in preparation for during the transition itself. We also had different conversations, so we convened speakers, took them through of speakers during the transition itself, where we convened municipal managers and senior managers, and similarly workshop them around what the expected roles are, or the expectations certainly are of them during the transition. We also, because we are mindful of the reality that a number of councillors were going to exit the system, we also convened a workshop with all councillors to prepare them for the exit, but also to deal with their welfare, poverty, education, gratuity, etc. We also issued transition guidance circulars, and with something innovative here, through partnership with COCTA and National Treasury, by instead of issuing separate notices and guidance to municipalities, we chose as the three to collectively issue communiques to municipalities, and we certainly see the fruits of that collective effort, because we now speak with one mind and we do not cause confusion within municipalities themselves. So we certainly appreciate that partnership, collaboration with Treasury and COCTA in particular in supporting the transition itself. And lastly, as SALGA, we also most recently approved through our National Executive Committee, approved and released the SALGA Coalition Government framework, which we developed in partnership with the Dula Omar Institute at the University of the Western Cape. And that much has been said around this particular work, and I will speak about it in a few more slides very shortly. Concerns that certainly have arisen that is keeping us awake at night. The first concern is around the low voter turnout. The fact that 26 million people registered and just under 20 million people cast their votes. So that's certainly concerning for us. The increased number of hum councils from where we were in 2016, where we had 27, now increased to 66. That is of concern to us. And then lastly, of concern to us also, is the caliber of councillors that have now entered the system and will be governing our municipalities over the next 5 years. Certainly, from a SALGA point of view, our response is that it would be important for us that we do not wait for the 2026 elections, but we start the process now towards mitigating again low voter turnout. And what we think could happen would include initiating campaigns where we would want to increase awareness by communities on the role and mandate of municipalities. We still believe that there is not a sufficient understanding of a municipality, what is expected of a municipality, and what is expected of self municipalities. And we feel there's a lot of work that needs to be done. We also felt that not sufficient is being done in profiling the plans of municipalities, the budget, but more so the status of implementation of these plans. And certainly what we would be looking at is coming up with sustained programs where we would be profiling the plan, the budget, as well as the status of implementation of those plans with communities. Thirdly, we are certainly looking at improving the engagement between councillors themselves and communities. We do feel that there's a gap between councillors themselves or municipalities. for the voter, poll voter turnout. And perhaps after we have done all of this work, it would indeed encourage people to go to the polls and make their mark. From a coalition government point of view, this is the picture that is emerging. So if you look at the elections since 2000, while coalition governments are not new, certainly what you have seen in the last two elections is that it is now something that is spreading across all provinces. But we have more than doubled the number of town councils with the recent elections. Now, what is the concern around coalition government? From a SAUGA point of view, our concerns are certainly that coalition governments have not become institutionalized, not within political parties, not within government itself, not within our approach towards coalition governments. There are no rules, not defined in any legislation nor in the constitution. There are no guidelines. What we have seen is that coalition governments have often been vague. There is no program of implementation or action. It is not tailored to the needs of those coalition governments. Political parties, it does institute strongly hold the view that we have now reached the stage that it may be necessary to regulate through a framework the coalition governments, whether it's the formation or the sustainability of coalition governments, and consultations are unfolding between ourselves and COFTA around these so that's in a nutshell how we would want to approach the coalition. Now when we look at the caliber of councillors, this is in the early stages. We have now seen a week ago the IEC releasing the names of newly elected councillors. The picture that is emerging is that we have 506 PR councillors, 4,416 ward councillors, of which we have 51 independents. We can see we still have a gender point of view, males taking up 63% of the seats. And if you drill down into the wards themselves, you will see that a large majority of wards are indeed led by males as ward councillors. So that is the gender picture that is emerging. This is the age picture that is emerging, and it tells us a story. Honourable Chair and members, that we can see if you compare it with 2016, if you compare it with 2011, we indeed see that there is a younger age group of councillors coming into the space, but we still see that similarly in 2011, that your age group 40 to 49 still makes up a bigger part of the percentage of the number of councillors that has moved towards younger people joining the space of public office bearers as councillors. Now, what we have not been able to assess at this stage, Honourable Chairperson and members, is the qualifications of our councillors. We will only get a sense of those when we embark on our council induction program within the next few weeks, because for us that would be a critical assessment that will direct us in which areas we need to explore in building the capacity of our councillors. So that will be an indication of the more medium to long-term capacity building initiatives that we need to look at as SALGA. But as an interim response, as SALGA, we will be embarking on the council induction program, as I've said, over the next few weeks. We are just awaiting all councils to convene their first inaugural meetings, and then we will get into the induction, general induction program, as well as the portfolio-based induction program. For the generic induction program, we are hoping that all councillors will avail themselves for a week-long program cutting across all of the provinces and across all of the districts, across all of the provinces, and that will then be followed by the more portfolio-based or maybe meaning trying to assist councillors on understanding the portfolios they are going to lead over the next 5 years, whether they are members of an EXCO or members of a mayoral committee where they will play a key role on certain portfolios, or they are now speakers or mayors. And that is some of the short-term capacity building initiatives that we will introduce and roll out between now and around the end of June. So Chairperson, that is essentially our presentation, and we are really asking the full committee to note the SALGA annual report and the related performance, and also note the local government transition of the elections themselves, the related concerns that we have as SALGA, and how we intend responding to those concerns. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Before asking President if there's anything.
giving us the platform to express some of the issues Saga would like to raise. I just also just want to request if Councillor Ngangeli is where our Deputy President may want to add anything to the presentation before we give over to you with your permission, Chairperson. Thank you.
Councillor Ngangeli is allowed.
Joel. First, let's commend you. you, Salga, for continuing to be an example to achieve a clean audit to the 250-something municipalities throughout the country. Mine on this outcome on inclusive economic growth underpinned, I don't know whether it's outcome number two or number one, underpinned by a special planning transformation, in particular focusing on special planning and land use management. I am looking at I'm seeing the outcome and the achievement in that particular area of the target. But my concern is that is this outcome as part of support by SALGA to member municipalities actually achieving traction to ensure that indeed there is a urban spatial planning as well as the regional economic development and economies that would actually interface with the rural and municipalities who have small dolphins there that are not growing. Is this outcome actually achieving traction in our municipalities in order to ensure that there is indeed, because in terms of the urban framework, this is intended to ensure that the economic hub of this country would actually be situated in the metros and the smaller, the intermediate cities and the smaller municipalities. And this intervention would assist. But when you look closely at the practical level, particularly in the rural small municipalities, you don't see a focus around land spatial planning and land use management and all those policy interventions underpinning it being put into practice in order to change the face of the economy of those municipalities. That's why I'm saying, is this actually attracting traction? Are municipalities taking this support with the necessary enthusiasm to ensure that they are changing the economies in their own space? The other point here would relate to outcome number, should be number three, which is the financial sustainability outcome. One, on this area, Chair, we are getting the sense that the entity had actually incurred an irregular expenditure of 250,000 due to supplier not being registered and product assisting. Acknowledge this error and going forward, is there any remedial action to address this particular issue? Again, Chair, on the same outcome, I remember in the 2018-19 SALGA presentation, they were indicating that as part of assisting and supporting municipalities to ensure that indeed the financial sustainability, this outcome is actually achieving. One, that SALGA had been talking about the development of an accountable framework that would ensure consequence management in the municipalities. And this was their response to the concerns of the Auditor General. Now, could SALGA assure this for me that indeed, as that framework, an accountability framework to ensure consequence management, has it been developed, has it been now applied to the Calonese municipalities in order to arrest this situation of a free for all within our municipality without any consequences? So on the issue of the coalition, CEO of SALGA Land is saying that political parties are actually concluding this coalition in secret, and they do not have a clear framework. And the experience that we have in the last tenure is that all these coalitions that collapse is a reverse, because political parties are going into a coalition with different political that this framework, its adoption is volitional, which means it could be rejected. And there is a guideline of SALGA. It would be important that this guideline is actually pushed and made sure through COPTA that it becomes a policy intervention and policy support by the church in the municipalities. Because if you measure this coalition, would be through COPTA. Yes, SALGA could develop this, but now would put as a guide to municipalities. But municipalities may not take that guide. And then it becomes a problem. That's why I'm saying, it's a pretty sure that I'm getting that in this particular portfolio committee, we have apologies of ministers and deputy ministers. Because this framework is indeed very important in ensuring that we stabilize the municipalities, because political parties on their own would never be in a position to institutionalize this framework. It is through COGDA that it had to be institutionalized in municipalities. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Bredick.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I will not comment in great detail about the state of SALGA's internal governance, save for one question at the end, perhaps. The most important thing I think we have to speak about, now that we have SALGA before us and we have sight of their important role, is the effect of this SALGBC collective agreement on salaries and benefits for municipal officials, concluded in September, I believe, with a 3.5% increase. And of course, in clause 15 of that agreement, as in the last one, provision for exemption, either by SALGA itself on behalf of its members or individual municipalities. I think Mr. Joel will agree with me that there are several municipalities in the country that are either already in financial distress or on the edge of financial distress, and who will not be able, objectively speaking, without making major cuts to other services, to be able to implement these salary increases. Even though it's 3.5%, it comes off a very, very high base, a decade of above inflation salary and benefit increases for public and municipal officials. So my question to Mr. Joel at SALGA is whether SALGA will be considering a collective exemption on behalf of municipalities, and if needed, application. What kind of support will say, listen, we simply cannot afford to implement these salary increases? We haven't budgeted for it. There simply isn't any money. We're coming off a decade of almost zero economic growth. In many instances, new governments will be taking over and trying to fix the mess created by the mismanagement of the previous governments. What will SALGA do in this very important role as the lobby for local government to assist these municipalities? Because it's not just in putting together the exemption application, it is also managing the expectations and the relationships between municipalities and their workforce. Unfortunately, we've fallen into a culture in South Africa where civil servants expect as a matter of right salary increases, even as those who do not work for the state and who depend on government services forego those increases. And it's something we have to speak about candidly, and something we have to do, we have to act on. We can't just spend ourselves into oblivion and watch as a large portion of local government in this country collapse, because all they can really do is spend money on paying salaries as opposed to delivering services and building infrastructure. Then, Chairperson, on the statement by Mr. Joel that an executive committee system will be preferable to a mayoral, an executive mayoral committee system, I think requires some interrogation. The difference between the two, of course, is that an executive committee system allows all of your major parties to have sitting on the decision-making body of the municipality, the executive of the municipality, to the extent that the council has delegated executive authority to such a committee, as opposed to the mayoral committee system where the mayor appoints his own cabinet without regard to the composition of council. I would just want to know from Mr. Joel whether he is not perhaps mistaken about the capability of this type of system to solve the underlying problems. Because remember, the problem presented by the fact that no party has an absolute majority is a problem that manifests itself in the municipal council itself. You need a 50% plus one majority of either budget, pardon, IDP, to appoint senior officials and senior officials to pass a by-law. And all of these significant decisions, and those decisions are reserved not for an executive committee or for the mayor, but for council itself. So even if you pull all of the major parties onto an executive committee and say to them, well, now you've got a seat at the decision-making table, that does not solve the problem of passing a budget, appointing officials, passing bylaws, and so forth. An executive committee will only draw the existing divisions that already exist in council onto the higher decision-making body of that municipality. And in that sense, executive committees being involuntary coalitions might cause even more chaos than would voluntary coalitions under an executive mayoral committee system. So I think, you know, before we grab and jump to conclusions about, you know, what an executive committee system can do for us, I think we also have to be realistic that it is not the silver bullet that that people who look at theory without proper understanding of the practice of politics propose it to be. Then lastly, Chairperson, it was pointed out preparing for this meeting that as far back as 2018-19, Selger has been talking about the development of an accountability framework for consequence management in municipalities. This is especially after all of the you know, reports by the Auditor General and the adverse findings as to the state of municipal finances, the lack of accountability, and so forth. It is now three financial years later, and Selger is still reporting that the development of this framework is in progress. Is there a timeline for this framework? Is there a reason why it hasn't yet been completed? Or is this something that Selger has realized will not really achieve the objective which it has set out? Thanks very much, Chambers.
We, I still can't say, Honorable Mkhalipi.
I'm here, Chair.
Oh, please take
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. I just want to apologize. I'm not sure if my colleagues have covered what I wanted to ask, but you forgive me, Chair, because I was not part of the meeting. I welcome the presentation from Selger, but I just want to understand on the slides where it says that summarized reasons for achieving 85%. I think that's where they want to justify why they have declined. There is an issue regard to the service provider that was not in the national database. I just want to get an explanation from Selger. How did that happen? Because I think that they are the people who are known as people of ethics. So we need a really explanation from their side as well. How did that happen? So the second one, Chair, on the outcome, where we live, we don't have such things. We are frustrated as we are coming from local government. We know what happened before even we went to the polls. So I just want to get, how do they achieve that? Where is it happening? How do they strengthen that role in this local government that we all know, which is, that is not even possible? They also talk about a program that involves vulnerable, your children, your women. If they can also assist us, just 2 points to say that we know there is this program that seeks to empower those people such as children and women. Just that day too, maybe we can have another different picture. Because where we live, in our world, there's no such thing. I don't know if I'm living in another world. So most of the time when we engage with SALGA, the issue of labor, labor issues, labor matters, it always comes back to them. We always ask them, can you assist here? Because in this municipality, there was an unrest and so forth and so forth. But in their presentation or in their programs, is not even mentioned about their role in labor disputes. So if they can also elaborate on that fact, because I want that to be specific, Chair. The COO will remember very well that I also engaged with him on this matter of the bargaining council of SALGA, whereby that issue, it has been a year now. No one seems to be interested to resolve that issue that involves the secretary of that bargaining council, which their offices are in KZN. And some of the issues that are raised by the workers in the bargaining council are so critical. There is nepotism that is taking place and that is involved. I know that there is an executive which also involves the unions, but I just want to question the role of SALGA, because I'm talking about sensitive issues whereby the workers are saying there's an issue of nepotism, there's issue of discrimination, there's even issue of sexual abuse. And we engaged with SALGA in KZN. They pointed out that no, in fact, this matter must go to the executive of the bargaining council. But I'm questioning the role of SALGA if such issues can be raised and can be swept under the carpet. As a result, I have engaged with the Department of Labor to say, no man, this bargaining council is supposed to even to account to, there's some sort of accountability that we must also get. It can't be that there is an issue that involves the secretary of the bargaining council and no one has an appetite to go and resolve that issue. So I just want to get a clear role of SALGA on such issues. I just want to get one answer as well, Chair, in terms of when they say it's on their summarized reasons for achieving 85%. They are mentioning the duplication with COPTA. I think there are so many duplications, it's not with COPTA as well, but on that one, can we get a specific answer? Once they have discovered that some of their programs are the duplication with COPTA, so what is the way forward? How to avoid that in future? And it's not only on COPTA, I believe. I also think that also SALGA can have some duplication programs with municipalities. So we need to define the roles of SALGA, municipalities, COPTA, and all stakeholders if we are out to resolve these issues of service delivery. The last question, I welcome the framework that has been tabled by the COO here in terms of the coalition. Whatever he is saying, whatever is proposing, I think it can be interrogated, it can be engaged with, because I agree on one reason, that coalition also produces unstable government, and it's very painful and sad to the fact that it affects the service delivery. It affects the whole life of a citizen who has went and said, I want to vote for a party that will govern myself, but other voters, they decided not to go and cast their votes because they said enough is enough. After voting, we don't get anything. So now that's why we ended up with coalition government, which I don't think that it is in the best interest of the people on the ground. But nevertheless, I think I welcome the proposal of the framework. We still have to engage with it because at the end of the day, we need something that is like, it will be a guiding document. Definitely, I understand that no, at the end of the day, only political parties assist with those matters of coalition. As I'm also here, Chair, I'm going to that meeting of a coalition as well. I know what he's talking about, but there must be a sense of... careful, but I want to get a clarity when he's saying in the very same presentation that he is also, or rather, on behalf of SALGA, they are proposing that that coalition must be in public. So if you can clarify with me, that what does that mean if you want those coalition talks to be in public? I'm not saying I'm against that. I just want to understand that proposal. What will be the achievement if all talks, whether you talk with a person who got only 3% in the council or 48% or whatever. So why he is saying that these talks must be public? Everyone must see how the political parties are engaging on. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me just pause there.
Thank you very much. I don't seem to see any further ahead. I think generally the three speakers, there are common areas where they raised issues, and I would now allow SALGA to respond.
Thank you very much. Can I start with your permission?
Yes, yes.
Thank you very much for once again giving us an opportunity to interact with the presentation. I must confirm that the quality of questions that have been asked here, they are also guiding SALGA moving forward. But once again, I should think, let me start with the Honorable Pumza. I wanted just to lift up a very important issue, which is actually guiding the country. The SPLUMA. When we initiated SPLUMA with the government of South Africa, the intention of SALGA was to make sure that at least as we develop the country, we must have a framework of the development which is also touching the rural space, not only the urban. And the unfortunate part, because of listening to the traditional leaders before implementing the SPLUMA, if you can remember, the traditional leaders, they were against for us to implement SPLUMA. But the initiative of SALGA was to assist the rural space as well in terms of developing the country. Remove the special development framework of the apartheid regime. But the unfortunate part, we have to consult those traditional leaders, of which I want to suggest, Chair, that moving forward, the portfolio committee must also assist us in terms of engaging with those traditional leaders for us to have a framework to develop the country instead of developing specific areas that were given partially the opportunity to have tarred roads in their space. So the second point that the honorable member raised is about the irregular expenditure or the defaulters of our sector. Yes, of course, I should think the framework, maybe Lance can actually sort of assist me on that one. We have to work with you as COPTA, the portfolio committee and the department, to make sure that at least the defaulters, we actually punish them. Because as SALGA, what we do, we give at a higher level the advice to our municipalities and COPTA for us to get a framework to punish those defaulters. Because, Chair, the last thing that I should think the Honourable Member raised, it was the same framework that we are proposing. It is quite right that we said, because if we have to regulate this framework, it will take not less than 6 months. But as SALGA, we have actually came to a conclusion that we have to put a framework that can assist political parties to get to these agreements to run our space after 14 days services in our people. So because initially we have ignored this reality, but we felt that as SELGA we need to assist the political parties in the country, and later COGTA can assist us in terms of regulating this trade. So the second person, Mr. Brink, I think what a noble question from the honorable member. In terms of the salaries, I should think, colleagues, you must actually congratulate SELGA, because we have managed to stabilize the local government space. You would remember that there was a plan or initiatives of postponing the elections. In that space, short space of time, Constitutional Court actually guided us to go straight to elections in October, end of October, beginning of November. But we have managed to manage the space of local government. You would imagine if we were actually sort of supposed to give political parties a space to campaign, at the same time, you've got a dispute with the labor in the country. So, yes, of course, some of the municipalities, they cannot afford the agreement that we have entered to with the unions in our sector. But those individual municipalities are allowed to apply for exemption, and of which that it should not be a collective exemption, because some of the municipalities they can afford. So those who cannot afford, they must apply, and then that option is actually open for those municipalities that are not financially viable. And the third point that we have raised, honourable member, is about the framework of the coalition, of which Chair, you have raised the same point, that some of these questions are overlapping, but they will be asked in different forms. I should think here we are guiding, to be quite honest, for the political parties to assist us to arrive at a point of having municipalities that are actually approving budgets immediately after elections and run municipalities instead of fighting each other. This one of the framework, I will actually refer it to Lance to assist. The last one, Honorable Kalipi, as usual. Kalipi is a very vibrant member of this committee. We'll have some stories about igniting us to, in terms of assisting the country. So, to be quite honest, in terms of the service provider, I will just jump that one, I will give it to Lance. The portfolio of evidence in terms of what we are doing on the ground, yes, we can do that, the members of the committee, a request of the committee, if need be. But I must indicate that during this period of the COVID-19, we have received money from the UN. We have assisted our small businesses in our country. And then if that information is required, yes, we can actually provide that information to the committee. But in terms of the behavior of our labor or managers at the municipal level, what we are doing as SELGA, we actually give at a higher level guidelines to guide municipalities to make sure that at least there is a stability in our institutions. But some of the municipal managers or directors at that level, they decide to move out of the frameworks that we're actually sort of giving to them to make sure that there is stability in our municipalities. But anyway, I must indicate that as SELGA, we take note of
we investigate some of the issues that we think are of importance for the sector to drive smoothly. The 85%, I should think, I must actually confess that COVID-19 actually affected us in certain areas. That is why we are actually sitting at 85%. But yes, of course, there are some small gaps that we felt that after elections we'll actually sort of deal with them. The fabrication of the agreements or the talks, what we are trying to do here, you will have a manifesto of a political party. At least, I should think it's very much important. We are also assisting you, Honorable Khalidi, that after years of party, that you came to their space. Now, we have actually signed a secret agreement with other political parties, of which some of the issues that you have raised in your manifesto are not actually connected to that agreement. That is what we are trying to do as SALGA, to build credibility in our political system, because we might have bad results where people, they cannot go and vote, because after elections we go to secret meetings and agree as political parties and betray them. So it's very much important to lift and highlight some of the key issues that you have agreed with those political parties that you have decided to work with. So, Chair, another thing that I wanted just to raise is all about the accountability, yes, of course. In the country, we have advised the political parties in terms of selecting candidates that can actually build integrity of local government. Hence, we said, if you are a political party A, at least you must have a mayor who can read documents. Because the collapse of systems starts with people who cannot read. If you cannot read, it's not easy to pick up the collapse of systems. So as SALGA, we have actually advised political parties to say, please give us people who can actually sort of read documents. If the systems are collapsing, they must be able to be equal to the task. So I should think some of the technical questions, Chair, I can allow Lance to assist us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I would also want to add something.
Okay, yes. You can add.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think Councilor Nangalizwe has covered most of the ground. The other thing which I would want to add is that what we are presenting is not final, because SALGA doesn't have legislators, nor does it have full authority over municipalities. Ours is to give guidance, and the documents and what we present is not final. It is also for enrichment. The framework is a framework. There was in the absence of anything in our SALGA brought this framework to the fore as some kind of a guide. And I don't think the framework can be enriched by the helicopter. I just want to add on the issue of the executive committee system, which was raised by Honorable Brink. I think it's an option which is put on the table from SALGA side as a way of dealing, of also trying to see how we can deal with the in relation to when a coalition is established. So what we present is for also to be enriched. But I must say the constructive questioning is also enriching SALGA to look into other areas which we may not have seen. The other questions will be dealt with by the officials. I think the coalition is concerned and analyzing. We are not saying it should be, the negotiations should be in public. What the proposal is that where there has been a coalition agreement and consent reached, it should be made public for for the communities in those areas to understand how this coalition is going to run or govern the municipality, and on what basis have they reached agreement and so on. It doesn't mean the negotiations should be taking place in public and so on, but we would like communities to be informed after there has been agreement reached that this is what has been agreed upon and this is how we're going to cover. Chairperson, I would really like to give over to the administration and they will then allocate the relevant questions to the relevant management to respond to. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, the chairperson, and also to the sound clash of I will respond to some that remain outstanding but also clarify others. But before doing that, I joined the management team. I certainly want to real chair through you and with your permission of Mr. Riona Luchungu just to respond specifically to the two governing council related questions. The first one is the exemption process linked to the current collective agreement entered into. Linked to that, the point the Honorable Khalifi around the indeed request we have raised just before, a matter of allegations related to the secretary of the government. I will also ask Rio to respond to that one. And then lastly, Rio to respond to the consequence management and the consequence. Just
thank you, Lance, and greetings to members as well as Salga leadership and colleagues. I think the question from Honorable Frank is in two parts. There's the part that deals with the efficacy of the collective bargaining systems. I think the best way, Councillor Blink, of answering that question is to say, first and foremost, as you know, in the system of our country's labor law, collective bargaining has got its legal place and jurisdiction. So we've gone through every legal opinion to explore the possibility that we could have an exemption application in a collective agreement that will be able to give rise to collective exemptions. And upon consulting senior councils as well as engaging with the Ministry of Labour, which has an authority of fashioning those collective agreements and by implication extending them to the non-parties, that provision is not palatable in our labour law system as it provides. And that every exemption procedure must provide for circumstances that would insulate a party with obligations to a collective agreement and to do so under procedurally determined provisions and in circumstances that would be exceptional in their nature. Which was why when we negotiated this monthly agreement, we sought to include in the exemption application a hybrid of arbitrator who would listen to the hearing when submitted by a municipality and or labor or South as a party, assisted by what we call financial assessors, people that would look at all the weighted criteria that are set out in Section 71 of the MSMA, and they would say this municipality is unable to genuinely pay salary increases, would not be able to pay salary increases because none of the weighted criteria that talk to a municipality's financial position, that municipality is able to fulfill them. Which would then mean, Honorable Brink, a municipality whose balance sheet is healthy, it's most unlikely to go to pass muster when it comes to those exemption applications. So that's what you've seen even with the City of Cape Town exemption that was being had in the last couple of weeks. It did not succeed because the financials of the City of Cape Town said it could not pay salary increase was because they want to budget to other legal operations of the city. So it's quite a tough balancing act between bid application for exemption and put it together with a CFO and executive management leadership of that municipality, endorse that application through council, pursue the consultation with employees on the ground, and that exemption application would ordinarily affect those employees in that municipality whose salaries would be whose salary increases would be withheld, because the effect of the collective agreement is that if you apply for an exemption, if you submit an exemption application, it will stay the implementation of the increase until that application is concluded. We also have legal services that we bring to the fore as SALGA in support of the arguments in the application hearing itself, as well as appear some of us as witnesses to support the municipality's exemption application. So we do that, including help with ensuring that the preparation at the level of the municipalities is in accordance with the preconditions that are set out in the agreement for an exemption application to pass. It does happen, Honorable Brink, that SALGA and the municipality concerned, we may have a difference of opinion about whether that application will succeed or not, but we never stand in the way of a municipality fulfilling that wish when it decides to do so, and ours is to fall in line and provide the much needed help and support when such a municipality so desires. So the efficacy of the exemption application is also to a certain extent mitigated or affected by the primacy of collective bargaining as provided for in the Labor Relations Act. We sought out to negotiate a dispensation of collective exemptions, but we could not do so. What we were able to do was to get a dispensation that SALGA could withdraw from a collective agreement under exceptional circumstances that may arise as a consequence of a national disaster, such as what we've seen in respect of the emergence of COVID-19. But as far as exemptions are supposed to apply for an exemption application, and since notwithstanding that all municipalities would be bound by that collective agreement as represented by SALGA in its capacity as an employer board. On the question that has been raised by Honorable Nkalipi, I would like to assure Honorable Nkalipi that since the last time the matter was raised at the level of the portfolio committee, FISL, we went back and tried to get the parties to the bargaining council to give the complaint the necessary attention. The decision-making structure and the governance of the bargaining council structure is such that the parties run decisions in the bargaining council by constitutional injunction. For a decision to be carried, all parties, including ourselves, the SALGA, Imagine and some must by consensus agree that something must be done. We do not have the legal remedy as SALGA to impose our view, but did as it may, we sought to influence the environment within which the executive committee must consider that matter as well. Honorable colleague, you would also agree there was an intent to engage with them, and that initiative succeeded with an engagement, and after that we went back to the bargaining council employees and saying for the matter to be dwelt with on a proper investigative level, the employees concerned who have made the allegations need to be free to come and step forward and put the allegations forward so that we can sanction the investigation and the executive committee, which was subsequently done after we have set up the task team, which the same task team also took the initiative to engage with Honorable Kalisi and some of the colleagues that were part of that meeting. The executive committee would receive a progress update on that matter when it meets on the 24th and 25th of this month. And I think when there's progress on the matter, I will take the initiative to the available avenues of communication with the portfolio committee to bring Honorable Kalisi up to speed with where the matter is, as it's a very sensitive matter. It's difficult for me in my capacity as an ESCO member, given the governance responsibilities I have to fulfill, they'll be able to talk about the merits of the case at this particular platform. But it's something that is being attended to as we speak. Yes, Honorable Mkhalipi is right that it took a while for us to get going, but we must have to mobilize the support of every part of the Bagadi Council in order to be able to carry out that initiative to approve of such process. Accountability and consequences management framework. We concluded that consequences management framework we submitted to COPTA, that it be positioned as secondary regulation either in the context of the current amendments that have been processed and or whether soon after the election the minister could convert those framework provisions as part of regulation so that municipalities would not be given a discretion or a choice not to implement them. We are also undertaking other elements of work to take the consequences and accountability framework forward. We are in the process of developing a good governance maturity index so that each and every municipality that falls flat of implementing those framework arrangements, we will be able to create that index and be able to, on a benchmark basis, report on it on a regular basis, and that information will be available not only to policymakers, such as the portfolio committee, but also to the public at large. So we are starting to deal with the matter of improved accountability and ethical leadership at many levels. We've also accounted for that in the learning content and manual of the councillor induction, which all newly elected councillors will go through. We went to engage with the political parties on Friday, 14 political parties represented in the National Assembly, with the addition of FCFA, which is co-opted as part of the party lines and committee, which is coordinated under the auspices of the INC, and political parties have also embraced that being an integral part of the content that will be a newly elected councillor will be subjected to as part of the councillor induction. We also wish to request the councillors as they are sworn in and they participate in the interest that they all sign to a pledge by name, and that pledge we would want to publish the fact that they would adhere to all the requirements that have to do with ethical leadership, effective oversight management, integrity, putting people first, as well as ensuring that the culture of consequences management and accountability management, as well as restoring good governance in municipalities, will become the mantra of the state local administration. Those are some of the responses that I would wish to present to the portfolio committee. With your permission, Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Municipalities of one of those difficulties is land ownership. So maybe let me start by saying spatial integration is about reversing decades of spatial disintegration based on class and race. And also the unfortunate outcome of our housing development policies, at least in the first 15 years of democratic local government. Those policies were more about chasing numbers and providing shelter to people, especially around urban areas. And tends to be provinces, national and provincial governments and local governments identified land that would give larger returns in terms of rent value spent in building a number of houses that will be made available to communities. So by its very nature, it would then chase land that is reasonably priced in order for the cost of land not too high to lead to fewer houses being delivered. So that also became a situation where then there was structured or additional structured disintegration in terms of race and class, in terms of spatial development. Now, in the past few years, there's been quite a focus on how to be that consciousness of effort. But once we have developed a development on the ground, it is very difficult to then change that in at least 30 years. Once you've done, you are done in that area, you have that pattern existing for a very long time. So we're trying to deal with that. One of the difficulties, as I said, is land ownership. That in the remaining strategic pocket that could facilitate spatial integration, land is not owned in the main by municipalities, owned by SOEs, especially Transnet. It's owned by private people. In some cases, in the smaller municipalities, land immediately around urban core is under land claim, which are difficulties that municipalities make it difficult to plan and utilize. What are we doing about that? We have we're participating in the ministerial committee that deals with issues of land, and we are credit that this is quite an important issue that needs to be attended to. And there is progress being made around the area of addressing land issues, which will assist municipalities in the addressing spatial integration. But at a municipal level, some of the things that we have done, because the tool that municipalities have at their exposure to deal with spatial integration is the implementation of the diploma. Because that act empowers municipalities to make a planning decision. Spatial planning and land use management empowers municipalities. So we have been focusing on this plan, because when they use that tool, they can expect spatial integration. In the last financial year, we assisted 20 municipalities in respect of that, and this work is continuing in the current financial year. We have also found that in some of the provinces, there are provincial legislation that conflict with implementation of diploma, and we have worked with those provinces to identify those legislations. And some of the provinces, such as Eastern Cape, those legislations were actually repealed. Western Cape, they were repealed. We're working with other provinces to repeal those legislations that conflict with implementation of diploma, to empower municipalities to implement diploma. We also engage in traditional houses of traditional houses of leaders to were part of also the problem, particularly in municipalities that are predominantly rural and where you have immediate rural spaces surrounding the urban core of municipalities. If you don't have the cooperation of traditional leaders in implementing proper planning, you will not achieve what is it to achieve in terms of spatial planning. So we have started with the last financial year, we engaged with those houses to facilitate cooperation. municipal land acquisition and release, which was part of our deliverables. We went as far as having a draft of this policy, which we are taking better than the current financial year, which seeks to help municipalities once they have identified the land through land audit. Because the clear way of saying which land are we not going to use for the purpose that we intend and which land are we going to need and implement that policy to do that. So there are quite a number of initiatives that are about improving spatial intervention, but the outcomes take a bit slow to get to because of some of the difficulties that have outlined. And the last few things that are being done in municipalities have shifted also from committed to spatial intervention. The priority housing development areas that the Department of Human Development is chasing in terms of development. We have now worked with the department and municipalities to make sure that they are integrated with the SDF priorities of the municipalities, which reflect those SDFs, which reflect a drive towards spatial integration. So as these SDAs are being developed, they facilitate the spatial integration that was supported. And then lastly, is actually the zoning. Because once you have this established old urban core and peri-urban core that exist in the way they do, all you intend are in private lands, in private hands. All you have to do now is to create the environment that stimulates a different attitude towards development in those areas. Some of our municipalities in Zimbabwe have done that very well, where they changed the zoning and they changed the planning for infrastructure such as transportation and roads in a way that has led to the owners of land along strategic areas being the ones to come to the municipality and apply for a rezoning to lead to what is the word here? To lead to densification along those identified areas, which through that densification you again achieve spatial integration and better utilization of land. So there is that also happening as part of the implementation as a tool in the hands of municipalities. Now to move on to another colleague's questions about the role of local government in facilitating social cohesion. In the last financial year, our focus was on the following. One was on the social package. We identified that part of the problem that as government as a whole, we are not integrated on delivering the social package to communities. So one department and sometimes different spheres of government, we tend to be pulling different ways, prioritizing vulnerable households differently in terms of providing the social package. We did a special analysis of the social package, and this is what we are using now to influence and look for a change and proper leadership across the spheres of government. We are saying on the table of the Department of Social Development that there must be one department that really looks at the social package and how it is being implemented across the country and across the spheres of government. And we are using this review that we developed, which identified gaps and what can be done in terms of the social package that places local government in a better position to facilitate social inclusion.
Can we be brief in terms of our responses? I think that general response by Council and Nganezwe must not be ignored, and then the rest, I think we are too detailed now in terms of how we get into this. I suggest I see Honorable Mpumza as well wanted to raise that. Let's be specific in terms of issues that we are responding to. For instance, if we talk about the framework, this accountability framework. I think the committee is interested. We don't want to develop that. We are interested in your plan, and it must have time frames. And so I would suggest, as we respond, we are not SALGA. We are a committee. So let's try and as much as is possible be brief and to the point. Thank you.
Let me just conclude then, Chair. I'll take your guidance. I thought we should provide some information that is in our annual report that talks to this. But anyway, on the special package quickly, we have produced a report that is assessing the state of local government in terms of gender parity, and that will inform the new term of local government in terms of what needs to be done in terms of gender parity. And then lastly, we have facilitated different categories of municipalities to share experiences in the field of gender, in terms of gender parity, so that they can be practices that can be implemented across municipalities. Those focused on the GBV in municipalities, disability, inclusivity in local government, and promoting the role of women in local government. Maybe let me stop there, but all of those are captured in the detail of the report.
Thank you. I'm also informed that Mr. Joel is not audible. Members are saying they can't hear you.
My sincere apologies. I have to put my camera on. I think it affected my sound. There is just one more issue I would ask the CFO, Salva, to respond to, and it relates to the 150,000 regular expenditure that was raised by both Honorable Kusa and Honorable Khalid.
Thank you, Lance, and good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to the portfolio committee members. I will try and be brief in responding to the question regarding the 250,000 that was declared as irregular by the AG. This is the result of the UNDP project money that we received and the earmarked beneficiaries to be assisted in providing car wash equipment. And I think the province concerned, they felt that the quotations that were being received were quite high, and these are informal traders, so therefore it will be appropriate to go directly to the manufacturer, whereby even though it was accredited, they didn't check that particular manufacturer was not registered with the central database. We even took it a step further to engage an internal audit to check whether all those 30 recipients received the 250,000 amongst them, and they indeed did confirm that. In fact, because we went directly to the manufacturer, we ended up assisting more. We assisted 50 beneficiaries with regards to giving them the 50,000 rand voucher for the car wash equipment, and those 50 beneficiaries have also consented, because it is a process that we follow when we complete the project, especially when the funding comes from an external source. Before we close the project, they have to confirm that yes, indeed, we have received the service or the product. Yes, we do acknowledge the fact that yes, there was an oversight of not ensuring that particular accredited service provider was I would like to say that we do acknowledge the oversight, and the project has since concluded, and the official consent has since left the employment of SALGA, because they were assisting us in particular.
particular with this particular project. Thank you. And as part of consequence management, we are engaging with National Treasury in trying to make sure that we get a condonement, if they will allow us, due to the reason that I've given, that there was no winning loss. All the recipients received the money. There was no malicious intent to defraud. It was really to look at how can we make sure that the informal traders, more instead of the state, but more informal traders are assisted. But we fail to check that accredited service provider was registered through the central database. It is something that we consider quite strongly, and we will make sure that that doesn't happen in the future. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. And we, within the time constraints, we will leave it there.
You have responded to most of the questions, and but I will allow members, if there are any follow-ups, my plea is to say, let's be brief to the point. And in fact, I was repeating another member's question, where we're talking about this accountability model. I think the member is saying what is not coming out clearly is when are we likely to receive this plan or whatever framework. In other words, the one-time frames now, because we have started talking about it in 2018-19. Now it's 2021 now. So they would want to see how, when, because especially now that municipalities, this is becoming a big problem. So I think we're more likely to see a framework. I think we know that. I think that's one. Honorable Kalipi.
No, thanks very much, Chair. I just want to say that, no, I acknowledge you, the response from SALGA in terms of the issue that I raised in regards to the Secretary of the Bargaining Council. But I must say that, Chair, it's very worrisome when these issues of this nature, when you talk about sex abuse, when you talk about nepotism, discrimination on the basis of race, it takes too long. And our leadership is supposed to resolve this matter speedily. They don't have appetite. But we'll extend ourselves to the meeting that has been called, that has been convened for this testing. I must also say that it's also unfair, but I don't think I must dwell much in this committee, because that meeting, they want all of us to come to Johannesburg while the issue is in Durban. But nevertheless, we'll attend and then we'll also speak to that meeting in order to resolve this matter. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. I don't seem to see any further hand. Then I think now we will allow SALGA to conclude the session. SALGA, I'm saying SALGA because the leadership must talk, and we are almost coming to the end of the session.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. On behalf of the SALGA delegation, I would like to take the opportunity the committee has given us. We will consider all the questions which have been raised and see where we can improve, but we want to appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. We are sorry that I had to come in and say a bit brief to your officials. I know they would want us to get into grips with the issues. Thank you very much for the delegation and the presentation. It was very clear, and I think we have also indicated our appreciation for the consistency by SALGA and in terms of achieving, and also in terms of being a role model for municipalities. And I assume all of us, we have after establishment of municipalities, see them different from the past. Councillor Langelizwe, you want to say something?
Sure, no, I'm covered by my fellow councillors. I should think, Chair, as I've indicated earlier on, that I don't want to create the impression that we are working together with the community, but I must emphasize that at least the quality of questions that you are asking us, you are also repositioning SALGA as well, because some of the questions are actually sort of putting us sort of above the sea level, that if we are not doing this for a certain period, we might actually sort of tamper with our space in terms of getting negative results. But I must appreciate that under your leadership, and then your previous chair as well, it was like yourself having that experience of local government. If we are actually giving you a waste, it was easy for the chair to pick up that and we pass. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much to the delegation of SALGA. Thank you very much, honorable members and staff, for both SALGA and Parliament. I think if there's nothing, I've come to adjourn the meeting. Can I do that, honorable members? Well, if there's nothing, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.